This is Cool Science Radio. I'm Lynn Ware Peek. What if anger isn't something to suppress, but something to understand and to harness? Our guest is Michael LeBlanc. He's a former Marine officer, tech entrepreneur, and a robotics founder. Drawing on lessons from combat, philosophy, business, he argues that anger can be a powerful force for growth, resilience, and leadership, and also positive change when it's channeled effectively. He joins me today to talk about his new book, What If Anger Is the Answer? A Harvard Marine's Guide to Shaping Aggression. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Lynn.
I'm really happy to have you because it's a concept that I don't think we often talk about, anger. But we're going to find out how it will help us. You know, I think if you did an informal survey of, say, 10 of your friends, you know, 8 out of 10 of them would say or might say that anger is, you know, used to intimidate, to manipulate. It's used by people who lack control, you know, or a reasonable emotional response to things. But you would refute that in some ways. How so?
Well, you know, I think the starting point is to think that anything that has been omnipresent throughout history and throughout societies is something that is evolved in us and something that we were created somehow to have. And so you see that with things like gossip, with bullying, with things that we try to eradicate, that we go, that's part of the old world. We don't need that anymore. Mm-hmm. But our systems still say that we do. And anger certainly falls in that category. And so I was really turned on to this mystery by Aristotle in the Ethics. He has anger listed as a virtue. And he said, of course, that, like we all recognize, there can be too much anger where someone goes off the rails, you get crazy yelling at another car in traffic. But he also said that it was a vice for you not to get angry enough at things. And that, you know, that piqued my interest the first time I read it. And that's been sitting with me for, you know, 2 decades now, developing how I've thought about this.
Yeah. Aristotle, you know, might say that not having anger is a vice because and it's not just anger in and of itself, but it's, as you say, anger that's channeled in the right way. That's the real challenge. It's not just being angry. And I think that's what a lot of people view it as, is anger is just an unbridled response. So let's talk about, I mean, you spent time in the Marines. So how, you know, it seems like anger is a strategy, I think, in military settings. How is it a strategy and how is it channeled in the right way?
You know, I think the Marine Corps is very much like large corporations in America. And you need to have pretty sharp elbows to be able to move your way around and navigate the organization. But what you start realizing is, you know, when I was 21 years old, I had 25 Marines that were my platoon and mine to take care of. If I wasn't there fighting for them in the organization, they weren't getting the resources they needed. They weren't getting the training that they needed. They weren't getting the deployments that they wanted. So all of these things, you have to go to bat for them. And I always think about that phrase, go to bat for someone, what that really means. Sometimes that means an emotional plea. Sometimes that means, you know, getting somebody else excited. But in many cases, it is an enforcement of what somebody else should be doing. And it's having to go in there and push them around a little bit. Now, if you go there and you are just going crazy and screaming at somebody, it's a terrible way to be able to get what you want. But when you're able to direct that anger right at the right person in the right way for the right amount of time, that all of a sudden becomes real art, you know. And it's almost something that belongs to the world of manners, I think. Mm-hmm. Doing it subtly and in the right way that's going to move things but not break things.
Interesting. You mentioned you have young kids, and so you're teaching them these strategies, I'm sure. I remember teaching my son, you know, to respect his teachers, respect his elders, but also stand up for yourself. And I remember a parent-teacher conference in which the teacher was, I mean, I left there ready to explode. The teacher was lying. The teacher was, you know, doing all of this horrible stuff. My son knew it. He was stuck with that, respecting people and standing up with himself. Like, he was so conflicted by being caught in the middle of these two feelings. And so how do you direct your kids towards, you know, channeling aggression?
Well, I really think people spend their lives stuck in those crossroads, right? Of feeling like I'm so angry about this, but it's not my place to say. And people do this with their bosses. People do this with their husbands and wives. People do this with their kids, right? Mm-hmm. Of just thinking I can't say anything. That's what they feel like. And so instead of having acute anger, they live with chronic resentment and bitterness. And I think that's where you really need to be able to bring these out. And so for the kids, this is a very, you know, Danny Tanner from Full House, sit down and talk through these things because they're complex. And, you know, my wife and I did, I think, a good thing with the kids early on where we told them the chief virtue is judgment. You need to have judgment. And so that means when we say something is right and something is wrong, those are just to help you navigate your way. But you always have to make a determination on your own about what was the right thing to do in a situation. And so when they find themselves in those ones, because we haven't used, you know, blankets like respect everyone, they have to know what is right in this situation. And sometimes you just see them freeze, but that's a great opportunity to walk them through and say, you know, how can that happen?
Yeah. So interesting. So you say you've been pondering this concept and how to frame it for 2 decades. So no doubt it's accompanied you maybe from college all the way through military and into the business world. And when do you think you have harnessed the concept of anger or aggression? Or when did you start to, and how did you see the personal results that you decided were positive?
Well, I think that I did it in a really messy way when I was in my early 20s. So that's when I was joining the Marine Corps. And I sort of had this concept that I think a lot of young 20-year-olds do, which is me against the world. That is where the boundary line is. It's going to be me. I'm going to dominate. I'm going to be number one. And I don't care who gets in my way. I'm gonna prove to be the best. And, you know, it wasn't long before I started realizing you can't get to the top without a whole bunch of people holding you up. And you start to go, okay, well, it's going to be us versus them. And there's going to be a team, right? And I started having my people versus the other people. And, you know, and I got really excited about that. That for me really continued into my first deployment to Afghanistan, where you had this team and you go, this is our team, and then there's everybody else. But quickly, you have to start partnering with, you know, the Afghan National Army and the Afghan National Police and, you know, 3-letter agencies and some guys in cargo pants, you don't know where they come from, you know. And I think this happens through everybody's life where you kind of lose that drive that you had, that initial anger drive. And it becomes a kind of cynicism because you go, nobody really cares to be here. No one cares about what we're doing. And you just sort of go, well, then why should I? And so that for me in Afghanistan, when I started to hit that, I realized there are 2 responses to that. You can either give in to the cynicism or you can build something with it. You can build something in the imperfect world. And I think that was the real change that went on me of being able to say, I'm going to use this anger to move things as they should be and try to make things out of it. And that has taken me to, you know, take me to Harvard. That has taken me to build 2 companies, robotics companies afterward. That's, you know, 3 kids. It's been the right, the right movement of that anger.
Yeah. Let's go back to ancient philosophers. It's funny, I just recently, maybe in the last 5 years, have learned more about Stoicism.
Yeah.
And realizing what it is, like our modern version of when we assign that word Stoic to someone, it's much different than what the ancient philosophy of Stoicism really was. But they have something in common, which is to suppress anger, to be calm, to... you know, that is part of your overall calm makeup, your more Zen self, which I think is so interesting that it contrasts with like Plato and Aristotle and what their concept of anger was.
Right. Well, and that, you know, for me, I was reading Epictetus, you know, a Stoic philosopher at the same time that I was reading Aristotle and was very excited by Epictetus. You know, it's hard not to read that like a YouTube from The Rock, right? It feels motivational. It feels like you know, I'm going to grind. Nothing's going to stop me. I'm always going to be able to take this step back. But there, you know, there's some dirty chapters in that book that talk about, you know, looking up to men whose families died, and they were able to watch their kids die and their wife die, and they didn't feel anything. And I can remember, you know, reading that and talking about it in class and going, this doesn't seem so good, this part.
Right? That's messed up.
Like the best life.
Yeah.
And that's where I started to realize, no, that's where Aristotle has the richer and fuller view of this. I always, with my kids, when I'm talking to about this stuff, is, you know, a Stoic, you know, wouldn't eat cake at a birthday party, right? They just go like, I am unmoved by the cake. But Aristotle eats cake at the birthday party. He says, it's a birthday party. You're supposed to put on the stupid hat. You're supposed to eat the birthday cake. There are things that are appropriate. And, you know, I think that ends up being the real challenge in life, is not putting up these very hard lines for ourselves that we say, I will not cross this, but going at things and saying, what's right in this situation? That's why it's so hard to punish kids. What do you do? That was kind of bad. It wasn't that bad. What exactly do I do? How do I respond? That's kind of what all of life looks like in Aristotle.
Yeah. My guest is Mike LeBlanc. He has written a new book, What If Anger Is the Answer? And we're talking about channeling anger so it becomes something positive. So is the alternative to channeling anger in a positive way repressing, avoiding conflict? I mean, is there some middle ground?
Well, I think that's what Aristotle would say, is you don't need to be raging at people. You don't need to be yelling at people. That's not what the anger looks like. The anger usually looks like insisting on boundaries. And, you know, I think about that a lot, where my son talks about every superhero and every superpower known to man. And he'll talk about, what if you didn't feel any pain? And I always tell him, it would be bad if you didn't feel pain. Pain feels like a bad thing, but it's actually a signal. It's telling you your knee is hurting, so stop running on it. And anger works the same way with boundaries. So it doesn't feel good in the moment, and often doesn't look good. But it is a signal that somebody's crossing over something that you don't want them to cross over. And it's a signal to you that you need to assert yourself. You need to stand out and push back on things. So I think that's really the positive way to take anger, is you don't have to be yelling at anyone to be angry. Mm-hmm. In fact, you know, I've noticed in myself, it's sometimes the most powerful thing to do is tell someone calmly, I'm angry. it has much more of an effect than yelling whatever it is that you're going to say.
So true. I think I'm one of those people. I think many people, in order to avoid conflict, they may present something that they're not so passionate about or not angry about. It's much easier for them to feel to present something that they actually feel very strongly about, very angry about, because they don't know how to harness it. So what are your first steps for harnessing the anger?
So for me, and I do this all the time, because I don't like conflict, just like anybody doesn't like conflict. But it is always to establish the facts first. So I am very big on a fact is anything that is indisputed, right? If you tell somebody, you know, you tell an employee who you think is lazing off, right? You never show up, you know, you don't care anymore. You know, the person goes, oh, of course I care. And you turn into a silly, you know, teenage drama. But if you go to them and you say, you know, you've shown up late 7 out of the past 9 days, it seems like you don't care anymore. That is all of a sudden a very powerful statement, because you have a fact that's undisputed, that they'll go, yes, I did do that. And, you know, I actually had that with an employee once when I went to him and said that. And he said, you know, my kid started a new sport and I'm the one that's driving him, and I should have told you about that, and let's fix it and let's do this together. And I thought, well, good thing I didn't come at him with, you know, how I didn't think that he was bought into the company anymore, because it was a logistics issue. But to me, when you can get facts on your side and see this isn't just me just feeling emotional and just going wild, there's actually fact behind it. It makes it much easier to break into a conflict and say, this is the fact that's bothering me. Do you agree with the fact? This is why it's bothering me, and this is what it makes me think. And usually those are much more productive conversations, but they're also just a great way for people to actually take whatever is angering them and say, is that just, you know, I haven't eaten? and it's, you know, 3 p.m. Or is there really something here that needs to be stopped?
Yeah. So you talk in your book about how anger has become sort of taboo in organizations, that we're supposed to have that calm and the zen maybe dominate over anger. And what do you see happening in organizations where anger is not channeled positively and in fact suppressed?
You know, I think that an employee that didn't show some anger to me would drive me out of my mind. You know, you need those corrections throughout the organization, because not everybody is doing everything that they should at all times. That's like rule number one of an organization. And so if you don't have anybody that's insisting on standards, then you're losing it for the customer. And many times, you know, in my first company, I think I was more angry than I am in my second. I did a less of a good job at holding it in. But the reason was, I said, I'm the voice of the customer, and our customer is not happy. That's what I'm feeling, is that our product is, you know, not up to par, and I am the one that is having to go back and insist. So when I see people working on things that are not core to a customer's concerns, it makes me angry. When I see people that are taking off early or not getting things done on time, that makes me angry. And it certainly did not make me the most popular guy in the office. But it did turn us into a very popular product with our customers. and those relationships, which were hard for me, because it would be always kind of a shame and embarrassment is usually where that anger would start, of feeling this product isn't good enough. You've got to take that back to the organization. And I think when you have a company filled with people that are fighting for the customer, that are fighting for, you know, high standards, that's when you really see excellence. And you see that on great teams, great sports teams all the time.
Yeah. Boy, you're reminding me of someone I know that's a head of a company who maybe it's almost where you are in terms of expecting such everyone to perform at such a high bar, but also not having the sensitivity or perhaps the maturity to turn it into this more positive, anger as catharsis, or anger as, you know, a way to motivate in a positive way. And without getting too detailed here, you know, what might you say to that person?
You know, I think that the bar is too high if you want to turn the anger into a sort of positivity that does this. I see moms suffer from this the most. And they walk around racked with guilt because they yelled at their kid, and they think, I shouldn't have yelled at my kid. You should yell at your kid. Your kid does things that need to be yelled at constantly. You know, why are you banging on the seat back there? There's no reason to be banging on the seat. Those are fine things to do. And I think that we got lost for a while of saying, like, well, wouldn't the best thing to do, you know, if we lived in a vacuum, the best thing to do would have been to feel that anger, but then to come up with the right way to say it to the person, and, you know, to say it calmly and to say it positively. Wouldn't it be great if there were no noise here and we could all sit and think about math equations? You know, that sounds like a great world. I don't know that we're ever going to see it. And so in the meantime, you got to get things done. You got to raise the kids. You've got to grow the company. You've got to keep the customers happy. And, you know, that to me is, you know, just classic. If you abandon the things that need to be done for the things that ought to be done, you're going to fail.
Yeah. I think that anger probably has gotten in part a bad rap in certain really visible organizations and among very visible politicians. And how about, I'll name one who's no longer with us, so it's safe, right? Steve Jobs, you know, he was known for just kind of violent outburst, and I guess I would ask you, what, you know, Steve Jobs was this creative genius and often felt angry because other people couldn't rise to his level of creative genius. How might you counsel Steve Jobs were he to be with us today?
You know, I don't think that Aristotle would have liked Steve Jobs' approach. And he would have thought that's too far out. The, you know, the anger that I show day to day in my company. Looks like I thought that was going to be done by the 22nd. Right? It's not belittling somebody. It's not digging into their personal life. It's not threatening them. I think those were all the kind of coercion tactics that you would hear that Steve Jobs used. Effective, obviously, in what he did. But Aristotle wouldn't say that all you're supposed to be is effective, right? It doesn't just matter that you win. It matters how you win and what that all looks like. So to me, that really is, it's pulling back from, there are a million things that we could all say about each other. We're imperfect beings. So it can't be directed that way. But you can just insist on these high standards. And I think for Steve Jobs, he did plenty of that. And that was the effective part that really worked. And then people sort of see the extra part that wasn't necessary, but peculiar to him, that was so hard on the people around him.
It's true. Interesting to look at those cases now with a little bit different view that you've given us today. Well, the book is What If Anger Is the Answer? And Michael LeBlanc is my guest. He's the co-founder of Foundation Future Industries. It's a defense-focused humanoid robotics company. And Mike, before I let you go, I just want to ask you a little bit more about your history. So you did 13 years as a Marine Corps officer in kind of special operations. Was that before or after Harvard Business School?
8 years active duty were before Harvard, and then 5 years, never do math in public, but I think that equals 13, was the reserves after I went to school.
Okay. And then you went right into robotics after Harvard Business School, or?
Well, while I was at Harvard, I had a chance to meet a PhD at MIT and someone who was getting his master's in robotics out of Harvard. And we founded a company called Cobalt Robotics that we were then able to raise money for to build robots that would replace security guards. So very, very bizarre twist from the Marine days.
Yeah.
A great path and learning experience for me.
And you're doing what currently, aside from writing books?
So now I have co-founded a company with Sankepa Tech, my co-founder. We started a company called Foundation Future Industries that makes humanoids. So robots in the shapes of humans now. And we sell them to, to the Army, to the Navy, to the Air Force. We're basically building robotic armies.
So that humanoids look how much like a human and how much like a robot?
They look just like, if you look at Iron Legion from Iron Man, that those robots that were going around, they look almost identical to that. Our new robot that just came out this month looks almost identical.
Brave New World. I assume you love your work.
Very much. Yeah, robotics are so fun because for many years, we were kind of just trying to push molasses up a hill with robotics. But with generative AI, it has taken off so much that now everything is rewarding about the robots because they can just do things so quickly. It's like everybody knows they have their smarter kids and their slower kids. It's like working with your smart kid every day.
Yeah. It's funny. AI is always so positive in response. And I'm trying to think about how, channeling anger in the right way, what kind of response you may get from AI. And I assume it would be something like, oh, that's really good of you to bring that up. It's true. I need to be more accountable.
Well, now, notoriously, ChatGPT has tried to give their chatbot more edge. So they were agreeing too much. And now, now you get answers like, who did the voice of Sporky in Toy Story? And it goes, you're not just asking for the voice, you want the voice actor, right? And it has to find some random way to disagree before it gives you the answer. Because people were sensing that there's no backbone to this. And that's fun for a little while. It's a vacation from people. But it's not a real relationship. It's not a productive one.
Yeah, absolutely. I know. I've started to filter out all those positive responses. Like you want to feel good about yourself. Like, oh, ChatGPT is giving me a pat on the back. But nah, it's probably kind of fake.
That's right. That's what I think. People are very much like that too. Relationships in your life. When you have somebody that agrees with too much, and you in your head are going, I know I didn't do well on that.
Yeah.
Right. That's when you stop. Stop trusting them. You think I need a new soundboard.
Right. What an interesting conversation. Michael LeBlanc is my guest. The book again is What If Anger Is the Answer? Mike, thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Lynn. Great conversation. Take care.